Yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. With me, as always, is Keith. Keith, welcome back to the booth.
What's up?
Keith is wearing a toque, or as the Americans would call it, a beanie on his head.
Is that what that means, beanie?
That's what they call it. Huh. That's what I learned. I mean, there's a few things I learned linguistically from being a Canadian living in the United States, and one of them is they don't know the word toque, but they call it a beanie.
I think of like a propeller cap when I hear the word beanie.
Yeah.
Right? Like with the
This reveals
looking.
The subtle differences between Canadians and Americans.
Subtle.
And thank goodness I'm being mindful of including the Americans into our language so we don't alienate them as a potential
when they move
group
here.
Of listeners. That's right. When they come here and listen to our radio show.
Yeah. All of those Americans pouring over the border will know to be fans of ours.
Which is, we'll see what happens in the election. So hopefully they can stay where they, put.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't want you, but just stay put.
I actually wrote in the blog this week, I got so many Trump questions, it's ridiculous. And I wrote like, I'm tired of it. I wrote like a sort of a...
Everybody's tired of it now.
A ridiculous post about the idea. First of all, I called him, what was it, a tangle-headed ape quat, which I thought was really good at the time.
Tangle-headed ape quat.
Yeah. And then I talked about how we're building a wall. We're just doing it politely and quietly like Canadians would. But it's a smart wall, so it lets Mexicans through.
Nice.
And then at the end, after it was all done, I wrote, by the way, the wall's being paid for by our health insurance.
Nice.
So we don't have to pay us that.
Nice. But it's actually being paid for by Obamacare.
Yeah.
Obamacare. That's why it's so expensive.
Yeah, that's technically funnier. Shut up, Jeff.
It's funny, when it comes to Obama and Obamacare and Hillary Clinton and her emails and all that, not that we're going to talk a lot about this now, but since we've sort of brought it up a little bit, I'm so, like, let's say Obamacare, for example.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's funny, like, witnessing the blind devotion to Trump, which from my standpoint is egregious.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but at least check in, sort of from a philosophical standpoint, check in with what my own bias might be, you know, when I support the opposite position. So, for example, when I hear Obamacare is screwing us, our country's going to shit or whatever, in my mind, my instinct is that's completely wrong. But maybe there's more to it. But I think Obama, yes, he can. He can create Obamacare and it'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're going to figure this out between the two of us, but...
We might.
I'm are people wrong that it's a bad idea?
No, well,
I wonder. I have no idea.
Well, the statistics about the Affordable Care Act is that it gave a whole lot of people healthcare that didn't have it before. Yes, there's problems with it. The consensus is that there's some problems with it because they couldn't do everything they wanted to.
Right.
And a lot of it was the proposed Republican plan from years before. It was Romney Care before, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a perfect system. I won't get into the details. I know a lot about it, but I don't get into details. Yeah, but
I know nothing about it.
Yeah, this is all.
That I know about it is in my mind. It's like Obama did it. It's probably good. He seems like a good guy trying to do the right thing, and people are probably misinformed because that's true of so many other things that are discussed.
Well, to keep it,
but I don't know that.
To keep it brief, it's sort of a microcosm of his entire presidency. I don't know if you remember this summit he held on TV. It was a televised sort of summit with all of the.
Early in his presidency?
Yeah, for the healthcare bill.
He was trying
to bring everyone together. And all the Republicans just said, no, this is garbage. He put the thing in front of them.
Yeah.
And they said, this is garbage. We have to start from the beginning again. And he said, no, let's work together and figure it out. So he eventually just, I don't think the executive ordered it exactly, but he got around the fact that they weren't supporting it and did it anyway.
Was their position out of spite, or is it because they believe it's inherently socialistic to do that?
I would like to believe that there are some of them who are actual... like humans who care about other humans, and therefore they had problems with the thing.
They believed it was bad for the humans.
But those people, if they existed, which they may not, would have been willing to go to the table and negotiate, I think. Instead, it was a showy thing where all the Republicans went, no good, start again.
To stand up to Obama.
Stand up. And so I do think overall it was a spiteful move. But what ended up happening was it got rolled out. The website didn't work very well. They didn't get the numbers they wanted at first. And then eventually it picked up. And now it's considered quite a success for the amount of time it has existed. And so it's hard to see the other side of it and figure out your bias because Republicans from the beginning of it have said it's garbage. Mm-hmm. And they've never changed at all on that assumption. But statistics dictate that it's helped a lot of people. There's a couple of problems with the fact that some people can't get the doctor they want, and some people are paying more than they were promised. So Obama said that you could keep your doctor. It wasn't going to affect that, which in theory it wasn't going to. But now they're sort of saying, well, he knew that it wasn't necessarily going to work out, so he lied. That's the big call on the other side. But it was one of those things where, yes, there was a few wrinkles, but if you were a nice, decent person, you go, oh, I see. He wasn't trying to fool everybody. He was reaching.
He isn't Satan.
He was reaching for good, and he fell short on a couple of things. But overall, it's a pretty good start. I think all sane people can agree it's a good start to get some socialized medicine into America where there's a lot of people who just have no insurance.
I guess if it's interesting. Who knew in bringing this up? I didn't know that a robust conversation was possible because I know nothing about it. And for some reason, which I didn't anticipate, you've actually spent a fair bit of effort following this. Why is that? I'm glad for it, but I'm a little bit curious.
Well, I didn't. I'm wickedly smart. So
yes.
All I did was just listen to 5 minutes of radio and make opinions all on my own.
Plus, saying words like wickedly, you sound like you're from Boston. And of course, Romney Care is from Massachusetts.
I'm wicked smart.
Yeah.
So,
I want to seize on the social thing you said, because from my sort of simplistic view of this, not knowing the details, my assumption is that the majority of people will always believe that universal health care is a good thing because it's good for them, especially if they're not wealthy.
Yeah.
But then I realized, well, that's kind of, you got to remember what the word, like, socialism is a dirty word in the United States. Mm-hmm. So for us in Canada, we, like, that's one of the things we're boastful about, is we have universal health care. But in the U.S., I realize our belief is it's good for the people, they should know that should be a given. But the truth is, the idea of people pooling their resources and supporting each other to help with healthcare. A lot of people down there, and probably the people who need it the most, I think they're somewhat predisposed to thinking that it's because of the associations of the word socialism and communism, the idea of pooling their money to help each other medically, they're actually inherently opposed to that. Is that part of it?
For sure.
Okay.
It's part of the indoctrination of that base, as well as the propaganda that continues, including the Obamacare propaganda, that it's bad for you. I remember Nancy Pelosi's kid. I don't think I talked about this on the radio before, but it's a favorite go-to of mine. Nancy Pelosi's kid, who does these, I can't remember her name, goes and makes little documentaries about this sort of thing, very left-wing kind of documentaries. And there's this wonderful clip from one of those that came out a few years ago where it's a guy just spouting his indoctrination. He's a very poor person. It's in Mississippi. He's poor. He's living in some sort of trailer. And he's complaining about Obama and socialism and how he doesn't need any of those programs and we need smaller government. Just saying all the party line stuff. Less government. Obama's evil because he's a half-breed. Like all this horrible stuff.
Yeah.
And then he pauses and she says, but don't you get food stamps?
Yeah.
And he says, but I deserve food stamps. And it just shows that, like, again, this indoctrination, there's no logic.
It reminds me of this whole Trump rigged thing, where if you talk to a lot of these people, they're going to claim that it's rigged because they've been told that and they buy into that. But then it's like you ask them, well, how did he win the nomination for the GOP?
Oh, there's, again, logic out the
window. But it's the same thing.
Though,
it's like if somebody's going to argue, oh, it's all, the whole system's rigged. Wait a minute. Didn't Trump get this far as a result of the media?
As a result of the democratic process as well. Like as a result of all of these things that you're accepting
the polls
actually work.
And the voting stations and the legitimacy of that.
That's like another level of ridiculousness.
I do want to point out as well, it's ironic that indoctrination, it's not quite the case. This isn't quite true, but it sounds like the word doctor is in that word. So you'd think that it's ironic
also,
to me
also
that they're indoctrinated and avoid free doctors.
And propaganda is giving people props.
Yeah.
So
propaganda.
Maybe they don't like that because Obama's black and they think that only black people give props. Which
that could be part of it.
Some of the interviews.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I think that socialism, of course, does exist in America. Socialism exists everywhere there's people. When you give your neighbor a cup of sugar, that is. So this capitalist rhetoric, this extreme capitalist ideal that everyone needs to compete against someone and the best will rise, it doesn't really take into account that there are socialist stylings beneath that that keep everybody happy and sane and in a community. If we were all just like greedy mothers, we would, that was short for a bad word, not mothers. we would society would collapse completely, which you could argue is sort of what's happening in the States slowly, mm-hmm. is that greed is tearing like sinew from a bone, the poor from the rich, because they're reaching so much for this capitalist ideal.
Yeah.
So for the poverty-stricken to then champion that as well with no knowledge is really
hard
to stomach.
Yeah. It's sad and it's ironic and it's troubling. And for me, again, I by no means am I an authority on any of this, and maybe we're wrong. I don't know. But my instinct of it on this matter is that you see the majority of people, which is poor people, some middle class people, you know, elevating this perspective that ultimately puts them in a more precarious situation. Mm-hmm. And all the while, they're talking about how America is going to be great again, going down that path. And it's sad to me because I'm looking at these people and like, you people will be the first to suffer.
Yeah.
When if these things played out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's true of Trump across the board. We're talking about one specific aspect of like conservatism versus, you know, Democrats, which is healthcare and their perspective on socialism. But that's, of course, just a really small moot point compared to the avalanche of bad things that would happen, I think, if people pursue. It's so sad. It's so sad.
Well, there's no surprise that it's linked to education. Education is something that we all know.
Trump loves the poorly educated. So he says.
We all understand the concept that education is important. People say that all the time. But this is a perfect example where it's very clear that education is important because people are being miseducated and they're being left behind. They know so little that they're just repeating. We've all done this. We've all heard a few opinions and decided to jump on one of those opinions. Not all of us, for every decision we make, look deep into how that decision should be made, who's made that decision before, who the experts are in that decision. But when it comes to something as grandiose as if you have health care or who's going to run your country, it's hard to relate to people who are just allowing themselves to be fed these lines. And I don't mean to victimize the poor, but everyone's responsible for their own stuff, right? And so the education that's lacking with those poor people is manifesting in them reaching at these simple propaganda style ideas.
Yeah.
They just hear like Obama's bad and they're like, well, that's
Trump rolls
that's
in
something.
As like the charlatan who's selling the magic snake oil.
Yeah. And somehow like, claiming that he's one of them, even though he's at the opposite end of the spectrum entirely. Lives in a gold house, this guy.
In New York.
Yeah. And he's convinced these people with pure rhetoric he's an outsider. He's outside the system. He's going to help them.
He's a blue collar billionaire.
The idea of I'm going to make America great again. People are going, wow, I do live in a crappy place. I would like America to be better.
Yeah.
Not thinking, how's he going to do it? What are the steps? And so that education also, that lack of education also hurts Hillary, because when Hillary goes, here's my 17-step plan, they have no interest in getting into that because their education's so low on those topics that the gap is too far to bridge. So they just go, oh, shut up, smarty. And it's easier, right? It's easier for them to, once they're miseducated, to continue lacking in education.
Yeah.
And that's the Republicans have just propagated that for so long down there with that base.
Yeah.
And
it really is the embodiment of like something that's been festering for a while now.
They're going to reap what
they sow,
for sure.
Certainly the last several years, and it probably goes back decades, but it was, as we've probably talked about before, really, hopefully what's happening is this is just shining a big light on something that exists. I was reading something where they're saying, is this whole Trump phenomenon, does it say more about him or the people and society and the system? And hopefully that's what this is. It's just like turn a huge spotlight onto something which already exists, which people can dispute more readily in the absence of somebody like him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Again, I don't think anything's going to come of whether if he loses, nothing's going to come of that. But what we need, and I don't know if Hillary's the person or not, but what we need is progressive government. And in this way, I don't just mean left-wing government. I don't mean Democrats. I mean, we need government that will address education. Imagine an election in 8 or 12 years where a lot of those people in whatever Mississippi, which because I talked about that, if they were getting better education. These people aren't inherently stupid people.
When you say education, do you mean post-secondary education?
No, I'm talking about all across the board. We need the states has fallen consistently for years in all areas of education.
Just general education, just literacy.
Literacy and like the funding for education gets cut constantly. I mean, you go into a place and you don't have money. One of the first things that gets cut is education budgets.
Do you think I'd be curious to know, in those parts of the country where people do have access to education, do they still have their own cultural bias, though? I mean, is it the case that people who are literate, and let's say highly literate, let's say they're well-credentialed and they have lots of degrees, are they still susceptible to their own cultural biases?
I mean, yeah, we're sort of talking about one class isn't the right word, because I don't want people to think that.
I mean, because you've got some of these Republican senators, let's say, that we're talking about. Probably they're highly educated.
Oh yeah, yeah. So for sure,
when they represent. I mean, but then again, I guess maybe they're just morally corrupt.
Yeah. Well, when you know someone goes down there to make a documentary, there's of course you talk to the poorly educated and the poor. But if, like we talked about this on the radio as well, there's a middle class section who are ramped up on Trump, and clearly there's senators, people who are supposed to be intelligent, governors, and other rich people who like Trump, but they're liking him for selfish reasons. They're not caring about what he's going to do to the country. I think the Make America Great stuff works on the poor and the middle class to a certain degree. What those really indulgent capitalist pigs, I guess is the right word, what they're doing is disgusting on a completely different level. I mean, like I said, you educate the poor and educate the people who aren't educated, and they will do better in the eyes of the people, the populace. But these guys at the top, they're not going to do better. They've chosen to better themselves, and which is why we really need to make sure we get progressive government, because government is the thing, even though they don't want to admit it, that takes care of the rest of the people. And the reason that they don't want to admit it is because they benefit when the people aren't taken care of. Rich people benefit if they get big tax breaks. Rich people benefit. There's no such thing as trickle-down economics. It's nonsense. It's been proven nonsense statistically. So we need progressive government. Whatever your animal, whatever your color, we need people who go, hey, and this is the definition of progressive, you're not getting something that the rest of us are getting. You know, you could call that socialism if you're an idiot, but what that really is fairness and equality. Give them education. That's progress. Give them the opportunity to make their own decisions. Give them the opportunity to be able to see above the horizon of propaganda that keeps them below the sunlight, you know?
I hear a lot about how the millennial generation is kind of fed up with the polarity of Republicans and Democrats, and how they don't really buy into that existing system and are kind of apathetic about voting for either. A lot of them, I hope and imagine, are going to vote for Hillary over Trump because they recognize that she's a vastly superior option, even if only because he's such a horrible option. Mm-hmm. But even though many of those people are doing so begrudgingly because they don't really want to play an active role in supporting something they think is fundamentally flawed. And it makes me think, is that just true of youth and has been for decades and generations? You know, they're going to college, they're thinking in a certain way, they're new adults and they have new ideas, and they're thinking in terms of like bigger ideas and bigger ideological ideas. Or is there something to the idea that this specific generation, the internet generation or the Facebook generation or whatever it is, truly is, unlike previous generations, intolerant of the system as it is, and therefore it's inevitable in the coming decades the system will change? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the alternative is. I mean, obviously in Canada and other social democracies, there's a multi-party system. But if you look here in Canada, typically the majority party is either the left or the right. Like, it's not usually the center party or the fourth or fifth party. Yeah. And that's been true for a long time. So I don't know if it's just a matter of a third party emerges in the U.S. and everything's better, or something that we can't really conceive of. I don't know. But it seems like it's becoming so extreme because the right in the U.S. is moving to the right and the left is moving further to the left. It's becoming more and more and more contentious. There is no possibility, it seemingly, of them getting together at a press conference and talking it out and sorting it out. It seems like that might be falling by the wayside as a concept. I mean, that's certainly been Obama's experience of being president. It's impossible.
You're hitting all my points here, all my political science buzz. It's hard to know how to attack your question, and it does need to be attacked. First thing, I think, is the idea that left is getting left and right is getting right isn't correct. I think
in the United States?
Yeah, I think what's scarier is that the right got so far right that it tugged the left to the center. I mean, Hillary Clinton isn't that far left from center. And that's just a natural occurrence.
Which is a concern of probably progressives.
Yeah, I mean,
why you saw so much support for Bernie Sanders, because they don't believe that she's truly
So when you think of things like gun control and laws for women, abortion laws, that sort of thing, even immigration to a certain degree, there's a lot of left-wing ideas. Marijuana is another good one. There's a lot of left-wing proponents that are just not being listened to. Those things aren't as important as they should be. If you're a left-wing politician, you're supposed to be dealing with those sorts of things.
Do you think the way to be moving in that direction is to elect a president that is more centrist as a means to getting to the left?
I think the problem is now that the Republicans have shown that they'll just like not deal at all, you almost just have to have a centrist politician.
Right.
Yeah, I think they, and in that way, the Tea Party is for a lot. This is, you know, we won't get into the history of it, but the Tea Party is, this is their legacy. Their rampant shenanigans on the far right has pulled the government very centrist, and that's hurting a lot of real liberals. And I think one of those issues you're saying about the kids, the millennials, they're not necessarily seeing left and right, I don't think. I think they're seeing a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
That's it. They're just seeing like a bunch of liars jamming away in the middle there somewhere. That's what they do. Kids, they talk like that.
That's the jam.
Jamming. Yeah.
The jam.
I think they just see the, I don't think they know yet. I don't think they're grown up enough to understand exactly why. But it is kind of cool to see them acknowledge that this is a broken system.
When you say they're not grown up enough to know why, is that to say that people that are older than millennials do know the answer?
No, I don't think that's the case. I just mean the experience of watching. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are millennials who study political science and they know all about this stuff. Mm-hmm. I just mean, in general, if we're taking a section of the populace, they probably know a little bit about the history, a little bit about what's going on.
Wouldn't they necessarily know? Maybe they know more. Couldn't they know more?
Again, individually they could. It's just me taking that the simple adage that the older you get and the more you experience, right?
Okay.
But I think that they're going to figure it out. And I think that it's possible that that generation has a higher percentage of well-educated people or people who are going to be more educated because they're angry about it and because they're going to look into it a bit more. I don't think they're going to fall for the propaganda stuff that we've been talking about, which is really positive moving forward if they're going to represent the country eventually, or any country.
But I guess my point is, I don't even know what a millennial is. Let's say it's up to the age of 35.
It's about that.
If you're older than a millennial, if you're 35 to 45 or 45 to 60 or whatever it is, I guess the question in my mind, and I'm not sure about this, is if you're older doesn't mean you know more if all that you know is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So yeah. It's like, I'm
just thinking about historical context. I'm talking about factual stuff.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying like the internet generation. It's like if the life that we were living now was exactly the same as the life that was lived 30 years ago and 30, we were all pushing like horses and carts and plowing the field and nothing had changed, then I think there's a strong argument that the older you are, the more wisdom you have. But I'm saying when the world is changing so quickly, couldn't you argue that younger people have more wisdom than older people?
Yeah, I think you totally could. I think the context is what I'm talking about here, like the idea of the political construct and that changing. Under the heading, could this change?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they care about it or care about the construct as it exists. I think you would have to be, this is not just about age, it's about time spent. You would have to be mired in it for a while to have an idea of how it's broken and how to fix it. Now, don't get me wrong. These millennials might have an idea of how to change it entirely, something I've never thought of, without that context. I'm just assuming that you have to understand how crappy it is to fix it. But if they want to go a completely different direction, like you said, adding a third party, there's no proof that that would fix the problem. And yet, that's the kind of thing that if you thought outside the box, you might just support. So in that regard, they could know far more. We just won't know until those things start happening. I'm just assuming, just like as Hillary Clinton, because she's been in the business for 30 years, I assume she's better at being president than someone who was 18 who's interested in politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that. It's because of the construct and how hard it is to understand it, even from inside, how that works. I'm just assuming it's a very difficult thing for someone without a lot of experience to do. I don't necessarily think that way in other regards. You know mm-hmm. me, I thought I was the smartest person alive when I was 16 years old. So
yeah, that's
I typically
thinking,
go the
I'm
opposite
thinking,
way.
How would young Keith feel about old Keith saying this about young people?
This is very specific about, to me, it's very specific about politics. Because that's one of the things, too. When I was 18, 20, and I was reading poli-sci books, no one else was around my age. I have a bias in that regard. I assume young people aren't interested in that as much. But I could be totally wrong. I'm willing to admit that.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether, I imagine there's been people that have arguing about different ways of governing for a long time, centuries and millennia probably, but in particular in the last 100 to 200 to 300 years, there's been a lot of discussion of left versus right and socialism and communism and capitalism. And so this is not a new conversation.
Yeah.
And in that way, I feel like nothing new is on the horizon because there's nothing new about this conversation. On the other hand, there's a lot of new things that are happening in the world, and it feels like things are coming to a head in terms of when you start to see what it looks like when the partisanship becomes so extreme, as particularly, at least in my mind, particularly since Obama was elected, it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. I mean, for me, I would call it sort of like this, the Sarah Palin era. For me, I feel like that kind of, for me, ushered in a new era of anti-intellectualism. You know, it's like, I don't know a lot about John McCain, but the idea that he was the Republican nominee, in my mind, wasn't offensive. To me, it seems, he seems like a, you know, of course, there's a narrative that he's this heroic guy, war hero. He's been a senator for many, many years. He doesn't say a lot of stupid things.
He also crossed the aisle a lot. He was the last politician
had that reputation
on that side, to do that.
So without knowing a lot about him, I didn't really notice him as being significant in any way in terms of a threat to my beliefs or whatever. Yeah. And then when Sarah Palin was chosen as his running mate, it was so transparently, you know, it was an attempt to try to bolster like the female vote or whatever. It was so, and I'm sure these things happen all the time, but she was such a dumbass. It was so offensive that she was, if he was elected and he was an older guy, right? So if he passed away, that he would be the president. It's kind of the beginning of this Palin Trump era, the birther thing and the Tea Party thing. And it just feels like it's all come to a head now where it's, you know, it seems that Trump will not be elected, and thank goodness for that, and there you go. But I don't feel like just because he won't win the election, Hillary wins the election, okay, we're out of the woods. I feel like this is getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Well, I think one of the problems that we have trying to understand it is we assume that the populace would want to select intelligent people. And that is clearly, this is what we're learning, is that this idea growing up that our leader should be the best of us, our elected officials should be the best of us. When we were being taught that in our comfy schools on the West Coast here, we had a certain level of education. So we assumed what that meant was the brightest of us would be there. But if you don't have that education, for all I know, if your life is something very, very, what's a good word for it? Very Trump. Right. If your whole life is trying to achieve money, or if your whole life is hunting,
he's a good businessman.
Right? Yeah. If you like hunting and you look at, and you don't care about the best of us being, or you don't care about the intelligent thing that I'm talking about, you just want the best of us to be chosen, then the best of us for you is people who are good at hunting. It's as simple as that. Right. So we're assuming that people want intelligent people who are going to do the job well. But what we're seeing is all from a lot of these Trump supporters is they somehow see this guy as a guy who like worked his way up in the world. And
well, their
he's
argument
an outsider.
Would be that he's far more intelligent than just about anybody that's ever existed. I mean, I've literally heard, I think his son said, and the hyperbole is amazing, right? Like, obviously, if somebody was to say Donald Trump is one of the greatest politicians of our time, or Donald Trump is one of the greatest politicians in the history of this country, that to me is troublingly false and just disturbing, but I would just kind of like ignore it as that's their MO, right? But his son made some comment about, he was talking about how his father has only recently ventured into politics. If he'd been doing this his whole life, he would be the greatest politician in the history of the world. That was his assertion. And you listen to that and you realize, okay, probably the Trump way is hyperbole because that's the art of the deal. And they believe that if they sell people on just the more grandiose, it'll just, who knows whether they believe that or not. But it is so insulting to my intelligence to assert that he could potentially be the greatest politician in the history of humanity, that that really bothers me, because I know that people are like, Donald Trump is the greatest politician that's ever lived. And to me, that's the kind of rhetoric when you're like sifting through the ashes of like the new Holocaust, like Holocaust 2.0. It's those kind of statements that really sting.
Well, let me make you feel better. We'll use rhetoric here to try to make Jeff feel better.
Good.
I think it was Plato. I could be wrong with this. I'm pretty sure it was Plato who said that politics is what happens when governance fails. So the idea that Trump is the greatest politician in the history of mankind
might be true.
I think it's possible that what he's doing, based on my assumption that he's a world-class dumbass, a pathetic, bully, sensitive moron, I think that he's pulling the wool over our eyes in a way, ours, maybe not ours, but the Americans' eyes in a way that's never before been done.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe by dictators, famous dictators of the past. Yeah. Maybe that's their MO as well.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's doing it without actually yet, cross your fingers, murdering a whole bunch of people or doing anything overtly heinous means that he could be the greatest politician of all time. He really could be. And that is in no way a compliment, because it's just taking our modern context here and the situation we have at hand. Hillary Clinton is by definition not a politician. She is someone who is terrible at politicking. She has just been doing the job for a long time. Secretary of State, for example, she's been doing work. And now that she has to be a politician, she has to politic, and people don't like her. And that's what politics really is. We use it as a catch-all term for everything that goes on in government, but government is supposed to be government. Government is supposed to be statesmanship and governance. It's supposed to be taking care of the people, doing the things that people can't do on their own, like social medicine, for example, socialized medicine. So this idea that he's a politician, sure.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Folks, you're listening to 101.9 CITR. That's on your FM dial. And I asked Keith before the show, are we going to touch on this Trump thing? And your response to me was, I think everything to be said has been said about it. We're about halfway through the show. And I don't think everything has been said. Well, I've got a lot of questions about all this.
Well, here's the problem, too. To be honest, not like I was going to lie, but I haven't said a lot about this on the radio. We've talked a little bit back and forth, but I have all these things that I have. My knowledge base in this regard doesn't interest me very much. I almost feel like it's, I wish I didn't have it. I wish I didn't know about politics, and I wish I didn't study philosophy, because now I'm in a position where people on the internet are turning to me, my friends are turning to me and saying, what do you think of this? And I don't care. I don't want to talk about it. It's so ridiculous. It's just that thing. You know when you see someone's behavior?
Because it feels pointless or it's annoying?
Absurdity, I think, is the proper word. If you see someone doing something absurd, you don't go, oh, I think I'll go and have a rational conversation with that person and fix the situation. You go, that's too absurd. I can't. There's no point in trying to be logical here. There's no point trying to discuss it.
What a waste it would be for somebody who sees things clearly, is clear-minded about it, and has a context for understanding it to keep that to themselves while the world burns to the ground.
Yes, I don't think I'm responsible for much.
Burns to the ground.
It's on me. So if that happens, look to me. That's what it is, man. It's that for whatever reason today, I had some things pent up. I guess I didn't realize we're there.
Well, how could it not be?
I'm tired of it all. There's so much factual evidence to dictate how this election should go.
Yeah.
Like reams and reams of it. There's not even a word for how much paper there is with facts on it that dictate that he is a friggin' moron. And therefore, you have to vote for anyone else, a popsicle stick you would vote for above this guy. It's just ridiculous.
And yet, as we're having this conversation and I'm thinking about how resolute our perspective is, there's tens of millions of Americans who, if they heard this conversation, they would be equally incensed by what we have to say about all this in the way that we're incensed by Donald Trump, because their perspective would be that we're very stupid, we're very misguided, and that we are sort of opposing reason, which is making America great, rather than letting it fall apart. Yeah, tens of millions.
Yes, and each one of those people, if I held that out a piece of paper, that was an official document from a scientist, a polling station, any arm of government that has done studies to dictate that there's factual evidence saying that Trump will not do a good job, that these philosophies work, these policies work on the left side, they would look at that document and say that it wasn't real, or that it was fake, or I made it up, or it's irrelevant to them. And that's the problem. It's that we can't have this. The absurdity of their position does not allow us to have a conversation where I can say to them, my opinion about this is based on this factual evidence. Fact has become opinion in the eyes of many of these people, and that's terrifying, because you can't communicate with someone who doesn't acknowledge factual evidence as basis for that communication.
The fact that he's the candidate for the GOP, and the fact that there's the fact that it's a certainty that he will win many states, regardless of whether people talk about how he's going to lose by a landslide. Well, that's a relative term. Even if he does lose the election by a landslide relative to other presidential elections, many states are going to select him as their option for president. That will happen.
Yep.
And for me, the question in my mind is, which is worse, the ignorance that led to this or the cowardice? So we're talking about some of the ignorance, right? Mm-hmm. What about the cowardice, though? Because you don't become the nominee for the Republican Party unless many, many people who know better are simply concerned about their own career.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's more to it than this, but my sense is many, many, many elected representatives or aspiring elected representatives, but a lot of congressmen and women and senators who do this dance about, if they do rebuke some of his statements, they still endorse him implicitly or explicitly, in my mind, simply because they're looking at the end of their political career as they have it mapped out, if they express what they truly feel.
Yeah.
Which is worse? If they know better,
mm-hmm.
and they're not ignorant, but they're cowardly, mm-hmm. which is worse?
Would you like me to answer?
Yes.
Cowardice is worse. Because again, that hypothetical person that I try to speak to, and I go, hey, I like your hat, it's red and with white letters on it, but what it says about America isn't true, here's the facts. That person not being able to relate to me or to those facts is not necessarily that person's fault. It might be because of their lack of education,
yeah.
and it might be because of the propaganda they've been beset with. So,
you could argue they're a victim.
Yeah, and so I don't want to take the power away from them completely, because there are definitely morons who just think stupid things, and hell, maybe I'm one of them too, and maybe you are as well. But in this regard, we're not.
We're almost certainly not.
Yeah. But in terms of someone who's afraid of their own, because there was a tipping point in the Republican Party. As we said before, the Tea Party swung things really far right, and then all of these sort of regular centrist, interesting candidates, guys like Rand Paul we mentioned before, and people who weren't all that crazy, now became too quiet. They're just not interesting enough. There's all these loud voices, and Trump is the loudest of them all, and that crushed everyone. So at some point, there was enough people in the Republican Party who didn't want Trump, who really should have spoken up. And I saw a few of them on TV. Bill Maher would have a few on. They go, I don't support Trump because of this, but don't worry, he'll never get in. That was the consensus. And just like everyone else, too, everyone was complacent about it. And so there was a tipping point when they went, oh, now if I speak up. And that's the key right there. That's when the cowardice kicks in. And who's to say what I would do in that situation? I don't know. Maybe I would also, be more worried about my own family and my own career. So it's not necessarily that I'm judging them. But that cowardice is the reason. Whether I care if cowardice is bad or not, that is the reason this happened. And therefore, they're more culpable.
Well, it's interesting. It's ironic because one of the grievances that Trump supporters have is that Washington is inherently corrupt. The system is corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Our representatives are flawed. We don't have any good candidates. Here, this guy's come along and he's our savior. The irony is that perhaps they've pointed that out to be largely true if one is corrupt for not having the courage to live by their convictions and to simply be guided by their desire to be reelected and to advance their own personal agenda while waving the big American flag and claiming to. But then again, maybe that's all politicians. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well,
that desire for survival in your own path. I mean, it's like I got my degree. I got elected in what? Now I'm going to throw it all away. I mean, if I hang in there and just wait for this Trump thing to fall by the wayside, 10 years from now, I could be president or whatever their own self-serving ambition is. Mm-hmm. But is it asking too much for somebody who pursues elected office to rise above that? Is that naive of me to object to that? And that's what they're all doing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think you're naive, but if we are talking about Keith's personal opinion, I think that it is, the whole system is corrupt. I've always thought that. I don't much like it. And so I understand people using that to fuel their constituents. It's easy to get on board with that, both in terms of actual physical evidence of corruption, like Chris Christie finding out that he was actually involved in shutting down that bridge, and to things like we're talking about cowardice and people sort of being corrupt emotionally and corrupt because of their ambitions. I've always thought that the reason people get into politics is not the right reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's for power, for money, or success. And I think that if you made the job closer to minimum wage and created a course that you had to take, a course in governance or statesmanship, if it was a 4 or maybe even an 8-year degree, and if it had to be, you probably had to pay more for the job if it was an 8-year degree, I think that you would see things improve quite a bit, because you wouldn't have psychopaths and power-hungry people. And I don't misuse the word psychopath. Check it out. if you didn't have that many people in those avenues of government, it wouldn't twist our society so much and it wouldn't be so corrupt. If someone like a man who really wanted to make the world better could take a course and then be elected for a job that doesn't pay all that much, it's more like social service then. And I think that because of the way the system works and how much money is in the system, there's a good chance that most everyone in it is corrupt, and the people who are idealists and really want to make a difference get quashed by that corruption.
Corrupt to the extent that you think they're lining their pockets, like financially corrupt?
I don't know if individually that's the case. Yeah. I just think that the system is in itself so corrupt that someone who doesn't want to do that will get put down by someone who is willing to favor lobbyists or do favors. And some would claim that that's the way it's always worked, and that's fine, but it doesn't mean that I or anyone else has to like it. And
do we have this problem here in Canada, or are we talking about this is an American problem?
I think everyone has had this problem since the beginning of systems. I think the first time anyone said, Steve, can you take care of this for all of us? And then Jim went, hey, Steve, if you take care of this a bit better for me, I'll have you over for dinner once a week. You know, to my cave.
And Jim said, what's for dinner, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. And then the saber-toothed tiger lobbyists were like, well, you should buy from us because, and there you go.
Yeah.
It's always been there.
Are saber teeth on the endangered species? Is that the reference?
Saber-toothed tigers?
Yeah.
They've been dead for a very, very long time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's a rarity.
It was a delicacy then.
Delicacy. Well, so how would society be better if this wasn't an issue? If the intention of politicians was better and they behaved better and the system was better, how is it that our day-to-day life would be better? What's lacking about our lives?
Well, that's a big question.
Would there be a larger surplus or something? Or
for politicians to be better, we would have to have a completely different system. You would have to have... we would inherently be more tribal, which is funny, but there would be more tribes, so it would get rid of this whole two-party system thing.
But what would we get out of it, is what I'm saying. Like, what would be better about
socialism?
Our society? there'd be less poverty and there'd be less people suffering? Is that
what
would be
better? Well, one of the reasons that there's so much corruption, especially in terms of money, is because of capitalism itself. And this can get pretty deep, so I'll try to be vague, but the idea of capitalism in itself could be very flawed, especially the extreme level of capitalism, the free market capitalism that we see in most of the world that has democracy, that creates a society where people are always craving for themselves, and therefore we're not taking care of our brothers as much as we would have in a different kind of society in theory. Now, the social societies we've seen in the past are communist societies, and they're not necessarily, it's technical, but there's all kinds of different sorts of socialism, and they haven't worked out all that well.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my thoughts is that give us 100 years and we'll see how well democracy worked out, because we're not sure about that yet. It just seems to be the best system we've come up with so far. And the idea of every individual person having a voice is a romantic and wonderful idea, and I'd like to think that's great, but we don't really know for sure. There might be a system of government that we haven't even seen yet that could be better. But
do you think there might be?
Yeah, my idea is this idea that Bernie Sanders talked about a lot in his campaign, this idea that he's a democratic socialist. I kind of like the leaning that way, the idea that you can be in this sort of government. Mm-hmm. You can be in this corrupt, and again, by corrupt, I'm specifically saying this capitalist-driven sort of government. You can be in that and still be a socialist. You can still care about people. Through the democratic process, you can still help other people. So I think maybe the right kind of man, the right kind of woman, could make it work. Bernie may have been that person. I don't know that Hillary is, and that's too bad. We all sort of feel that's too bad.
Bernie could have been that guy if he also had the Senate and the Congress.
So, yeah.
Because that's the trouble, right?
Which is, yeah. And also maybe he doesn't have enough connections, and that's part of the corruption as well, right? He doesn't have the power that people who like the Clintons have from being in that world for so long. But the point I'm making is that we could see a change within the government with a guy like him, but we might need to see something completely different for it to get better. I mean, we're watching in America right now. There's a very fall of Rome feel about America over the last 10 or 15 years. That's an empire that is crumbling. And so it's possible that this free market capitalism and banks stealing homes and yada, yada, yada is never going to work for as long as they had hoped it would. And there might be something in its ashes that we'll see that's different. Who knows?
Folks, don't change the station. No, you're not listening to Top 40 Commercial Radio. This is College Radio, where Keith and I, we're so inclined, can explore questions like, is there a better way of government than socialism, communism, or democracy? Will it emerge in the 21st century? We can ask these questions like they've never been asked before, but we can ask them in the context of what the hell is going on in the United States with this Donald Trump candidacy. As I said before, he is not going to lose. The score is not going to be 98-2. That's not how it works there. The score, assuming that he loses by a quote-unquote landslide, is going to be approximately 300 to 180, whatever the hell it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. And in a hockey game, if the score was 3-2 or 4-2, that would not be considered a blowout.
Yeah. I hope he wins a popular vote. I hope he loses the popular vote by 5 or 6%. That would be good.
Isn't that sad, though? Isn't it sad that the belief will be, that's a marginal, that's what I find so interesting. I mean, I guess I'm beating this to death here, but I find it so interesting how it's characterized as a landslide if the differential is a matter of single percentage points. Mm-hmm. In any other context, that would not be considered a compelling differential.
Yeah, and it's scary because we've seen lots of historical context when it comes to polls and what people think is going to happen and who actually comes out to vote. There's a possibility that he could still win because those people who say they'll vote for Hillary might just not come out that day.
Yeah, I've been very superstitious ever going all the way back to the early days of the nominating process for the Republican Party before the primaries and caucuses and all that. I was very superstitious and nervous about talk about what could never happen because I felt like there was a connection between people saying that and believing that and creating the wiggle room for that very thing to happen. Mm. So ever since he did get the nomination, it was like, okay, we were wrong about that, but he could definitely never be the president. It's made me uncomfortable. So even now, I look at this every day, and mind you, my sources, I believe that my sources are objectively explaining what's going on, but it's not Fox News, it's not this right-wing Breitbart stuff or whatever. Yeah. I'm sure they have a different story. I believe it's true that all of the information suggests that he will definitely lose and it will be a compelling loss and all that. But I don't know that's true.
Nope.
So I really balk when people are like, oh, no, I know that he won't win. I'm like, you don't know that. Please don't say that.
Yeah, that's why there's people in the States like Michael Moore, among others, who are making a big deal
that's
off that
right,
point.
That's right.
They're saying out loud, don't be complacent. Be afraid. He could win. Michael Moore keeps saying it over and over again in the media.
Yeah.
He could win.
Yeah.
It really could happen. And he will. I think he actually said on Bill Maher that he will win. He said Trump will win. He's trying to scare people into voting.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Man, this is a tough thing to talk about on the radio because I feel like you don't want to get too far into the drudgery of how politics works and all that stuff. You want to keep it entertaining. And I don't know. I mean, I know there's frustrated people out there in radio land listening to pundits. And it's hard to figure out what is interesting about it. Like, my passion for it, I guess, should be enough. But, I don't want to go further. Like, there's part of me that's like, oh, let me break it down for you even further. But it's like, well, people are going to get bored if you break it down too far.
I think one of the benefits of college radio is that the expectation of it being entertaining is quite low.
Well, it's funny. I find that...
and I think that... Let me just assert that to you right now and allow that to free you.
Yeah. Well,
only thing we're bound by, Keith, is time. And we do have another 10 or 15 minutes. So, so that's our only boundary here
Trying to, like, get off this topic now.
We could say right now that we're going to serialize this specific conversation. Mm. And it's going to last indefinitely. And we could just have it for an hour at a time for weeks and months and years to come.
I really do feel like...
In which case, even time would not be a barrier.
I really feel like I'm done with talking about the guy. He just keeps coming up and he keeps saying stupid stuff. And I guess that's what it is. There's a lot of things that I've kept from saying. Again, I don't like the system. I don't like how our government works, even here in Canada. And so I try to stay separate from it. For someone who has a pretty broad knowledge base on this and spent a lot of time with it, I very rarely give my opinion about it. So it's funny for me to be on the radio giving my opinion. And also, now that I'm letting it out, to try to deaden it a little, that's not the right word, but to try to keep it, like you said, enjoyable.
Muted somehow?
Mute it so that it seems like these are just concepts that people can understand. You don't have to go read Leviathan or The Social Contract or The Prince to understand what the hell I'm talking about. But part of me is like, you could tear this guy apart with all this historical information.
Well, I'm teasing it out of you.
I'm resisting. That's why this conversation is
happening. If you recall, and we'll listen to the episode later to confirm this, but I believe it was in the first 5 minutes of the episode that we suggested that the wall that's going to be built up between Canada and the U.S. that will allow for Mexicans to come in but not Americans would be subsidized by Obamacare. So I think I got us headed down this path. Folks, if you're listening to the radio show right now, which is Now We're Talking, you want to give us a call at 604-822-2487. we're running out of time. We've only got about 10 minutes left. But if you've been listening to the conversation and you've been waiting for the invitation to go ahead and give us a call and to offer your perspective, we're happy to hear it. So again, the number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Give us a call and we can compare notes with you. What do you want to sort of continue this conversation for the next 10 minutes? If somebody calls in, we can take it from there. But I guess mindful that there's 10 minutes left in the show, not because, I mean, at this point, I feel like this has been what we've talked about this episode.
Sure.
So in that sense, I'm willing to maintain this conversation. But is there anything else that you wanted to touch base on this week that after the show we're going to say, oh, we didn't get the chance to?
Nothing important. I mean, I felt done with this conversation before we started. I felt done with it the whole time I was talking.
Okay.
So it's hard.
Keith, we do have a call. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to make sure we get them. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Oh, 1 second, Keith. We're going to go to line two.
Oh, we had two at once.
Lost them both. That's okay.
Oh.
I feel like that was probably a technical mishap on my end. I'm not sure.
Yeah, call back. We had two at once.
You know, it's funny. We encourage people to call. We have taken calls before.
Yeah.
So it's not as if it's never happened.
Yeah. And on a fill-in show, we had a whole.
But I'm going to take responsibility. I think somebody called, and I think I'm just pressing the wrong buttons. Give us, which I'm mortified to say because that's such a cliche. Let me try again. Hello, you're on the air.
I'm just wondering, this is, we're talking now, right?
Now we're talking. That's right. Yep.
Now we're talking. I just joined in. I just wanted to know if you could just give me a recap of the whole show.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you like us to give the recap in sort of real time or do you want it to be sort of just an abridged version?
No. If you can do the real time, I know you only have 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
If there's some way that you can still like squeeze that in, that would be like perfect for me.
Keith is from Newfoundland. So Keith, I don't know if that's going to help you remember everything that was said, but certainly you can speak very fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
would you be able to take 50 minutes of content, say all the words, but just basically 5 to 6 times faster?
No, I would not be able to do that.
Sorry, okay. Sir. He is a newfie, but he says he can't do it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's fine. Then I guess just give me then the brief rundown. What did I miss?
We usually do a wrap-up right at the end, don't
that's
we?
That's true. Actually, you know what?
I don't have time for that.
He doesn't have time.
I need it right now.
He needs it right now. How about, Keith, let's give him a trailer, a preview of what's to come later in the show when we do the recap. So the recap is usually about a minute or so long.
That's funny.
Let's give him the 15-second version of the recap.
I get the feeling that this caller is not the kind of person who likes trailers very much, but I can still do it if you want.
And if he does...
No trailers. This is... no trailers. You know, just give me... this is also confusing.
Yeah,
also,
Keith, I know. It's
you know what,
confusing.
Keith? Sir, we're doing our best here. Keith, let's clear it up for him. This sounds like a good gentleman. He's called in.
I can do it.
Keith's going to take it away. Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. Keith Kennedy is now going to give an abridged, trailer-like-esque recap of what we've talked about this episode for our caller who'd like to hear that.
Thank you.
Okay. Politics is what happens when governance fails. And that's what we're seeing in America.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Jeff and Keith present this week's news. Now, topical.
Keith, I've just put that on because we have a little bit of time to talk about what happened this week in the news. But of course, the only thing that really did happen this week in the news was everything we've just discussed.
We got another caller.
Oh, we do? Should we try to take that?
One
second.
This is lighting up, dude. That's like the sixth
caller. This is all happening. Yes, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi
there.
Oh, I love what you're doing. It's very good.
Thank you very much.
Oh, nice of you to say.
So we've got a couple minutes left in the show. Did you want to comment on our political discussion this evening? Or what's going on?
Well, I think what you're doing is fantastic.
Thank you.
It's wonderful, and I'm an old lady.
Okay.
Good for you.
And everybody is talking about that election.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, as a Canadian, I could care less because I can't vote in that election.
That's true,
It's funny that we're laughing at them, but I guess, you know, it's, what is that? Schadenfreude,
yeah. That's sour grapes?
We're just liking to see them take a fall. But really...
It's entertaining, yeah.
Really?
In a tragic way, though, isn't it?
Very, very tragic.
Tragically entertaining, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
It doesn't worry you? You say you feel like as a Canadian, it doesn't really have a direct impact on your life, so you're not worried about it in the way that you would be maybe if you lived in the United States?
Yeah, because it would be more embarrassing, right?
Yeah. You know, for me, I have to say my perspective has always been, I feel like at some point in this century, they're going to come for a water. And I feel like what's happening right now might accelerate the process by which that happens. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm an old lady, and I do have a little bit of wisdom.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just from the fact that I'm still on this planet.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe it.
Didn't come back to pick me up yet. Still waiting.
Keith's a believer in that concept.
Yeah, I do. I believe it.
But they already got our water, sweetie. You know, it's...
True. Nestle?
Yeah, they did get it. They took it from Newfoundland, too.
This is high stuff. This is what... I mean, come on. This country was founded as a corporation. Ours.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a little scary just in itself, right?
Yeah.
So, this is the thing that gets me, that anybody could be taking any of this seriously at this point, 2016, and the candidates for president of the United States are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a reality television.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It's not real.
Do you think that my concerns that this is sort of... my concern as I've watched this play out is that it's foreboding, and seeing the rise of Donald Trump is a foreboding clue to how there's sort of a possible fascistic uprising in the United States in the 21st century. Should I just let that fear go?
No.
Okay.
But that's
honest right there.
This is the history of our planet over and over and over and over again.
Yes.
And when it's decline of the Western civilization, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And we're such babies here. We're only 200 years old or whatever-ish.
Yeah.
And it's sort of sad, but it was sad for me when I was your age. And Reagan was...
He had the same slogan. That's who Trump stole his slogan from.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret Thatcher and Reagan were big allies. And it was just... It was so... To me, nothing's really changed. It just continues.
In cycles?
In the absurd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's really important, that historical context is still relevant. And that's part of the education thing I was talking about earlier, is that we all need to look backwards so we can see where we're going.
Well, thank you, caller, for checking. We do appreciate it. Maybe give us another call in the future.
Thanks so much.
Yeah,
nice to hear from you.
Keep doing it. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
What a lovely call. You know, that's one of the things about being here in Canada is people are so polite. Here we are getting all
riled up.
And then the Canadians call in.
And then a wonderful...
And their sense of propriety is overwhelming.
Wisdom-filled lady calls and then
it was nice.
Good.
Well, Keith, we had a caller earlier who was requesting that we give a recap of the show. And it's about that time for us to do just that. We've got a couple minutes left in the show. So what happened this week?
Well, first of all, we got a lot of calls. I think it's important to mention, despite all the stuff that we said about Trump, that we just got like 5 or 6 calls coming in.
Well, at least 2 of them I rejected now by accident. That might have been them calling back.
We had 3 different lines lit up at multiple times there. Now, we've had calls. We did a fill-in show where we had 3 calls.
Yeah.
But I think we've only had 1 or 2 on this show.
Well, we've had a lot of calls in the past where it was you calling.
Right.
We should acknowledge that as well. So these were not solicited from the general population.
What's exciting is the idea that we could talk about something for a half an hour, 45 minutes, and have a segment at the end where we could take a few calls. I mean, if people are interested in that, that might be really fun, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was cool. And I'll repeat what I said earlier, which is before we started the show, I said to Keith, what are we going to talk about this week? Do you want to touch on this, what's happened, the latest with this whole Trump nonsense?
Yeah.
And your conclusion is that's everything's been said, let's not bother. Then we started talking about a hypothetical border wall between Canada and the U.S., a smart wall that would only allow in Mexicans but not Americans, that would be subsidized by Obamacare.
Yep.
And look what happened. We had a healthy, robust conversation about specifically what's happening there right now, what's bound to happen there in the future, and what's going to happen on the planet. Ideologically, politically.
And
we came up with no answers. But, Keith, I appreciate some of the perspectives that you offered.
Yeah, I didn't know that was coming. Maybe I would have prepared a little bit had I known. But off the top of my head,
I think you've been preparing your whole life.
I don't know about that.
I asked a few questions where I was just thinking out loud, assuming that we would fumble in the dark together.
Yeah.
But you shone some light. Well, you really did.
Well,
it was instructive and helpful.
And I'm wearing a toque.
And he is wearing a toque / beanie.
Yeah, it's my Pink Floyd toque.
Oh, is it?
A little shout out.
To Pink Floyd?
Yeah, to that band no one's ever heard of.
Okay, I thought maybe it was a shout-out to the person who gifted you the Pink Floyd.
No, to hell with people.
Oh, okay.
Only Pink Floyd.
Folks, you've been listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Jeff Bryant, your host, and we'll see you next week.